Chapter 10. Having just returned, with money in their pockets, from a trip beyond the sea. Don't believe it, don't believe a word of it. Lastly, that it is an opinion very generally received, or which ought to be generally received, that the College of Astronomers in the city of Rotterdam, as well as other colleges in all other parts of the world, not to mention colleges and astronomers in general, are, to say the least of the matter, not a whit better, nor greater, nor wiser than they ought to be. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 notes to Hans Pfaall, asterisk 1, note strictly speaking, there is but little similarity between the above sketchy trifle, and the celebrated, story of Mr. Locke. But as both have the character of hoaxes, although the one is in a tone of banter, the other of downright earnest, and as both hoaxes are on the same subject, the moon moreover, as both attempt to give plausibility by scientific detail, the author of Hans Pfaall thinks it necessary to say, in self-defense, that his own Jew Desperate was published in the Outern Literary Messenger about 3 weeks before the commencement of Mr. L's in the New York Sun. Fancying a likeness which, perhaps, does not exist, some of the New York papers copied Hans Pfaall, and collated it with the moon hoax, by way of detecting the writer of the one in the writer of the other. As many more persons were actually gulled by the moon hoax, than would be willing to acknowledge the fact, it may here afford some little amusement, to show why no one should have been deceived, to point out those particulars of the story which should have been sufficient to establish its real character. Indeed, however rich the imagination displayed in this ingenious fiction, it wanted much of the force which might have been given it by a more scrupulous attention to facts, and to general analogy. That the public were misled, even for an instant, merely proves the gross ignorance which is so generally prevalent upon subjects of an astronomical nature. The moon's distance from the Earth is, in round numbers, 240,000 miles. If we desire to ascertain how near, apparently, a lens would bring the satellite or any distant object, we, of course, have but to divide the distance by the magnifying, or, more strictly, by the space-penetrating power of the glass. Mr. 50 makes his lens have a power of 42,000 times. By this divide 240,000, the moon's real distance, and we have 5 miles and 5/7 as the apparent distance. No animal at all could be seen so far, much less the minute points particularized in the story. Mr. 50 speaks about Sir John Herschel's perceiving flowers, the papaver rays, etc., and even detecting the color and the shape of the eyes of small birds. Shortly before too, he has himself observed that the lens would not render perceptible objects of less than 18 inches in diameter. But even this, as I have said, is giving the glass by far too great power. It may be observed, in passing, that this prodigious glass is said to have been molded at the glass house of Messrs. Hartley and Grant, in Dumbarton, but Messrs. H&G's establishment had ceased operations for many years previous to the publication of the hoax. On page 13 pamphlet edition, speaking of hairy veil over the eyes of a species of bison, the author says it immediately occurred to the acute mind of Dr. Herschel that this was a providential contrivance to protect the eyes of the animal from the great extremes of light and darkness to which all the inhabitants of our side of the moon are periodically subjected. But this cannot be thought a very acute observation of the doctor's. The inhabitants of our side of the moon have, evidently, no darkness at all, so there can be nothing of the streams mentioned. In the absence of the sun they have a light from the Earth equal to that of 13 full unclouded moons. The topography throughout, even when professing to accord with Blunt's lunar chart, is entirely at variance with that or any other lunar chart, and even grossly at variance with itself. The points of the compass, too, are in inextricable confusion, the writer appearing to be ignorant that, on a lunar map, these are not in accordance with terrestrial points, the east being to the left, etc., deceived, perhaps, by by the vague titles, Mare Nubium, Mare Tranquillitatis, Mare Fecunditatis, etc., given to the dark spots by former astronomers. Mr. 50 has entered into details regarding oceans and other large bodies of water in the moon, whereas there is no astronomical point more positively ascertained than that no such bodies exist there. In examining the boundary between light and darkness in the crescent or gibbous moon, where this boundary crosses any of the dark places, the line of division is found to be rough and jagged. But, were these dark places liquid, it would evidently be even. The description of the wings of the man-bat, on page 21, is but a literal copy of Peter Wilkins' account of the wings of his flying islanders. This simple fact should have induced suspicion, at least, it might be thought. On page 23 we have the following : what a prodigious influence must our 13 times larger globe have exercised upon this satellite, when an embryo in the womb of time, the passive subject of chemical affinity. This is very fine, but it should be observed that no astronomer would have made such remark, especially to any journal of science. For the Earth, in the sense intended, is not only 13, but 49 times larger than the Moon. A similar objection applies to the whole of the concluding pages, where, by way of introduction to some discoveries in Saturn, the philosophical correspondent enters into a minute schoolboy account of that planet, this to the Edinburgh Journal of Science. But there is one point, in particular, which should have betrayed the fiction. Let us imagine the power actually possessed of seeing animals upon the moon's surface, what would first arrest the attention of an observer from the Earth? Certainly neither their shape, size, nor any other such peculiarity, so soon as their remarkable situation. They would appear to be walking, with heels up and head down, in the manner of flies on a ceiling. The real observer would have uttered an instant ejaculation of surprise, however prepared by previous knowledge, at the singularity of their position. The fictitious observer has not even mentioned the subject, but speaks of seeing the entire bodies of such creatures, when it is demonstrable that he could have seen only the diameter of their heads. It might as well be remarked, in conclusion, that the size, and particularly the powers of the man-bats, for example, their ability to fly in so rare an atmosphere, if, indeed, the moon have any, with most of the other fancies in regard to animal and vegetable existence, are at variance, generally, with all analogical reasoning on these themes, and that analogy here will often amount to conclusive demonstration. It is, perhaps, scarcely necessary to add that all the suggestions attributed to Brewster and Herschel, in the beginning of the article, about transfusion of artificial light through the focal object of vision, etc., etc., belong to that species of figurative writing which comes, most properly, under the denomination of rigmarole. There is a real, and very definite limit to optical discovery among the stars, a limit whose nature need only be stated to be understood. If, indeed, the casting of large lenses were all that is required, man's ingenuity would ultimately prove equal to the task, and we might have them of any size demanded. But, unhappily, in proportion to the increase of size in the lens, and consequently of space-penetrating power, is the diminution of light from the object, by diffusion of its rays. And for this evil there is no remedy within human ability, for an object is seen by means of that light alone which proceeds from itself, whether direct or reflected. Thus the only artificial light which could avail Mr. Locke would be some artificial light which he should be able to throw, not upon the useful object of vision, but upon the real object, to be viewed, to wit, upon the moon. It has been easily calculated that, when the light proceeding from a star becomes so diffused as to be as weak as the natural light proceeding from the whole of the stars, in a clear and moonless night, then the star is no longer visible for any practical purpose. The Earl of Ross's telescope, lately constructed in England, has a speculum with a reflecting surface of 4071 square inches, The Herschel telescope having one of only 1811. The middle of the Earl of Ross's is 6 feet diameter. It is 5.12 inches thick at the edges, and 5 at the center. The weight is 3 tons. The focal length is 50 feet. I have lately read a singular and somewhat ingenious little book, whose title page runs thus: colon lam dans l'alvni ou la voyage chimerique fato monde de l'alvni, now Wilman de Coward par Dominique Gonzales, adjuant chérieur espagnol, autrum t dit le courrier volant, miss en notre langue par J. B. D. A. Paris, chez François Piat, presse la fontaine de Saint-Pinoist. Et chez J. Goignard, au premier pilier de la grande salle du palace, proche les consultations, Mxelvaille. pp. 76. The writer professes to have translated his work from the English of one Mr. Davison Davidson. Although there is a terrible ambiguity in the statement. J.J.N.A.I.U., says the original de Monsieur Davison, Medicine des Mieux versus Qui Soyent Aujourd'hui dans la Cie Noissance des Belles Letters, A Surtout de la Philosophique Naturelle. G. Louis said obligation enter les auteurs, de M.A.W.R. non seulement, Miss N. Main C.C. Liver en Anglois, mais encore le manuscrit du Sieur Thomas Dannon, Gentil Homme Cassois. Recommandable pour sa vertu, sur la version de qual j'ai advoqué j'ai ter le plan de la Mayen. After some irrelevant adventures, much in the manner of Gil Blas, and which occupy the first 30 pages, the author relates that, being ill during a sea voyage, the crew abandoned him, together with a Negro servant, on the island of St. Helena. To increase the chances of obtaining food, the two separate, and live as far apart as possible. This brings about a training of birds, to serve the purpose of carrier pigeons between them. By and by these are taught to carry parcels of some weight, and this weight is gradually increased. At length the idea is entertained of uniting the force of a great number of the birds, with a view to raising the author himself. A machine is contrived for the purpose, and we have a minute description of it, which is materially helped out by a steel engraving. Here we perceive the Signor Gonzales, with point ruffles and a huge periwig, seated astride something which resembles very closely a broomstick, and borne aloft by a multitude of wild swans, ganses, who had strings reaching from their tails to the machine. The main event detailed in the Signor's narrative depends upon a very important fact, of which the reader is kept in ignorance until near the end of the book. The Ganses, with whom he had become so familiar, were not really denizens of St. Helena, but of the moon. Thence it had been their custom, time out of mind, to migrate annually to some portion of the earth. In proper season, of course, they would return home. And the author, happening, one day, to require their services for a short voyage, is unexpectedly carried straight tip, and in a very brief period arrives at the satellite. Here he finds, among other odd things, that the people enjoy extreme happiness, that they have no law, that they die without pain, that they are from 10 to 30 feet in height, that they live 5,000 years, that they have an emperor called Erdonazar, and that they can jump 60 feet high, when, being out of the gravitating influence, they fly about with fans. I cannot forbear giving a specimen of the general philosophy of the volume. I must not forget here, that the stars appeared only on that side of the globe turned toward the moon, and that the closer they were to it the larger they seemed. I have also me and the earth. As to the stars, since there was no night where I was, they always had the same appearance. Not brilliant, as usual, but pale, and very nearly like the moon of a morning. But few of them were visible, and these 10 times larger, as well as I could judge, than they seemed to the inhabitants of the earth. The moon, which wanted 2 days of being full, was of a terrible bigness. Must not forget here, that the stars appeared only on that side of the globe turned toward the moon, and that the closer they were to it the larger they seemed. I have also to inform you that, whether it was calm weather or stormy, I found myself always immediately between the moon and the earth, I was convinced of this for two reasons, because my birds always flew in a straight line, and because whenever we attempted to rest, we were carried insensibly around the globe of the Earth. For I admit the opinion of Copernicus, who maintains that it never ceases to revolve from the east to the west, not upon the poles of the equinoctial, commonly called the poles of the world, but upon those of the zodiac, a question of which I propose to speak more at length hereafter, when I shall have leisure to refresh my memory in regard to the astrology which I learned at Salamanca when young, and have since forgotten. Notwithstanding the blunders italicized, the book is not without some claim to attention, as affording a naive specimen of the current astronomical notions of the time. One of these assumed that the gravitating power extended but a short distance from the Earth's surface, and, accordingly, we find our Voyager carried insensibly around the globe, etc. There have been other voyages to the Moon, but none of higher merit than the one just mentioned. That of Bergerac is utterly meaningless. In the third volume of the American Quarterly Review will be found quite an elaborate criticism upon a certain Ernie of the kind in question, a criticism in which it is difficult to say whether the critic most exposes the stupidity of the book or his own absurd ignorance of astronomy. I forget the title of the work, but the means of the voyage are more deplorably ill-conceived than are even the ganzes of our friend the Signor Gonzales. The adventurer, in digging the earth, happens to discover a peculiar metal for which the moon has a strong attraction, and straightway constructs of it a box, which, when cast loose from its terrestrial fastenings, flies with him, forthwith, to the satellite. The light of Thomas O'Rourke is a Judaeus pre not altogether contemptible, and has been translated into German. Thomas, the hero, was, in fact, the gamekeeper of an Irish peer, whose eccentricities gave rise to the tale. The light is made on an eagle's back, from Hungry Hill, a lofty mountain at the end of Bantry Bay. In these various brochures the aim is always satirical, the theme being a description of Lunarian customs as compared with ours. And none is there any effort at plausibility in the details of the voyage itself. The writers seem, in each instance, to be utterly uninformed in respect to astronomy. In Anne's Fall the design is original, inasmuch as regards an attempt at verisimilitude, in the application of scientific principles so far as the whimsical nature of the subject would permit, to the actual passage between the Earth and the Moon. Asterisk 2, the zodiacal light is probably what the ancients called trapes. Emicant trapes quos docos vocant. Pliny, Lib. 2 page. 26. Asterisk 3, since the original publication of Hans Pfaall, I find that Mr. Green, of Nassau balloon notoriety, and other late aeronauts, deny the assertions of Humboldt, in this respect, and speak of a decreasing inconvenience, precisely in accordance with the theory he urged in a mere spirit of banter. Asterisk 4, Hevelius writes that he has several times found, in skies perfectly clear, when even stars of the 6th and 7th magnitude were conspicuous, that, at the same altitude of the moon, at the same elongation from the earth, and with one and the same excellent telescope, the moon and its maculae did not appear equally lucid at all times. From the circumstances of the observation, it is evident that the cause of this phenomenon is not either in our air, in the tube, in the moon, or in the eye of the spectator, but must be looked for in something, an atmosphere, existing about the moon. The gold bug, what ho! What ho! This fellow is dancing mad. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.